Shooting it raw?
Yes. Shooting it raw.
I think photography captures the moment. You know, a photo can often, a photo says what 1,000 words can't say. It really can bring you into the moment sometimes, as close as you can get. You can feel things through a photo.
Okay.
Why are you
That's
laughing?
Great. Okay. That's great. It's just because I'm trying to leave the door open. We're just meeting for the first time. Sheila Priver, yeah?
Priver.
Priver. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. And then Priver. Okay. So Sheila, we've met through a sense of interconnected things because I wanted to have somebody on the podcast who is in Israel and who can talk about their experience that way, hopefully make it real for some listener, just to sort of share. And yes, thank you for joining me on the podcast. I have no idea what you sent me as photos. And I know this is the podcast is about inspiring people and it's kind of optimistic and positive, but how do we keep a handle on that? Or how do we reconcile that given the brutality and insanity of the past month plus?
Big, big question. If you had spoken to me prior to October the 7th, the Black Saturday, then you would have heard me speak. I would have spoken differently. I was really always very empathetic, very understanding of the other side. Today, it really is very difficult for me. My heart has hardened. I'm having a really, is it there? I think you're frozen.
Yeah.
I think my heart, you know, empathy and compassion has, you know, I'm having a hard time with it at the moment. On the other hand, actually one of the photos I was going to put up and I didn't was of a little Arab child and a little Israeli child, you know, planting the seeds of peace. I think time will allow us to heal, and I think it very much depends on, you know, our leaders. I think people are born good. I think people, there may be a little evil here and there, but I think in general people are good. People want the same thing.
To situate the listener and me, because I don't know where so where do you live?
I live in Hod HaSharon in Israel, which is about 15 minutes outside of Tel Aviv. We're far away from the south. I mean, far away. Nothing is far away in Israel. It's about an hour.
Yeah.
It's about an hour from what happened on October 7th. Israel's a very, very small country. So like I said, yeah, just outside of Tel Aviv.
Okay. Okay, so the way that I do the podcast is I kind of bring up the first photo, or we have four photographs that shape or basically curate a conversation. And somehow from that, we will discover how you see the world. Okay, this one is called, This one is called Cars from Leftovers from the Party.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a screenshot of a photo by somebody, I guess, called Ziv Koren.
Right.
Okay. So somebody who didn't know what they're looking at would think, oh, this is a scrapyard where a whole bunch of cars are rusted and burned, or well, it looks burned. So basically there's like 1, 2, 3, maybe 4-ish rows, and one, maybe about like 70 cars, 100 cars, where all the windows are blown out in the cars. The paint is all, so it's very, very faded color. It's mostly brown, leftovers from the party. These cars are just burned to, I mean, just deformed, just, yeah. Sheila, over to you.
Yeah. I'm actually, you're mentioning this and I'm choking because this was a party. These are cars of young kids, kids my, you know, my children's age, you know, late 20s, 30s, who went out to a peaceful party, a rave.
Mm-hmm.
There was about 3,000 of them.
Mm.
And the, on October the 7th, when the Hamas came in, the commandos, the terrorists, they came to the party and brutally and inhumanely murdered innocent kids. In fact, five of my kids, my personal friends, kids' friends were murdered. Another friend of mine's son was murdered there. And this is the point. We're such a tiny little country. We're such a tiny little country. What happened on that day with the party, with these were cars of the kids that came to the party.
Mm-hmm.
What happened that day? I'm not even talking about the kibbutzim at the moment, but at that party, in total, 1,400 innocent babies, elderly, children, people like you and me were murdered. Innocent, loving, peaceful civilians.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just make it quite clear, you know, 1,400 may sound like, oh, not a big deal, because when we're talking about Russia, America, China, you know, India, these numbers are, they're not that impressive, but 1,400 Israelis killed in one day is the equivalent of plus minus 50,000 Americans in one day. So I just want people to understand what we're talking about here. And this party, for me, like I say, these are my kids. This could have been my child. Okay, my kids were actually abroad, but they probably would have been at that party. And do you know how many people I know? How many? I'm just the average, you know, six-pack, you know, so Joe's six-pack in Israel. Average civilian living, making, you know, a living, enjoying my life. And this party, I know at least seven kids that were murdered. Okay, opposite me on the other end are two sisters from one family. Really close friend of mine, her son was murdered. And this is a salt of the earth. Okay, these are kids that are peaceful, loving.
Yeah, it was a peace party.
Absolutely. And it all started with rockets. They didn't know what was happening before, you know, that morning started with rockets. I woke up at 6:30 in the morning from a rocket, from a siren. And the things that happened then, rape. And the way they brutally murdered them. I mean, it's so, so sad.
Can I just make one small request? Just be careful when you move your hands against the wire of your earbuds, because the mic is in the earbuds. And so it just becomes, it just kind of breaks.
Sorry.
I mean, look, I'm going to leave this in the recording. That's fine. It breaks. So for the listener, what that sounds like is just the mic running. But so that's one of the things that I find hard to kind of connect, in the sense of, like, when people say, well, to make it equivalent, for you to understand how brutal and terrible it was, 1,004, I mean, of course, this is how we make sense of the world. So it's like, 1,400 people in Israel is equal to 50,000 people in America, which is equal to, I don't know, 180,000 people in China. But it's that whole idea of one person is a universe. Like one person, like one poor person. And then the whole shock of the brutality of it all is that here you have a collection of people who are there, who are just like peace and love, maybe doing ecstasy or Molly or whatever, MDMA, who are just probably feeling so loved up and who have been dancing all night and who have been just like, and as you say, these are just basically kids.
Kids.
And then to have this like obscene kind of violence. Yeah, it's how do we connect? Yeah, how do we make sense of this? And so, for example, look, I'm not in Israel, but I am connected to Israel, and in a way, every Israeli or every Jew is connected in a way to Israel, who knows somebody. So now it's been like 40 days or 40, however many days. How? So, you know, like in terms of when you go through trauma, the first thing is shock. And the first sort of the feelings are shock and then anger. And then so.
Rage.
Where are you now? Where are you now in terms of your emotional evolution?
Well, that's such a good question. I'm actually having such a hard time with myself. I don't know, because there's a lot of feelings within me, which I've not known them. I've never been connected to these type of feelings. I was brought up on peace and love and, you know, respect. I grew up in Hong Kong. I grew up, I was Jewish, I prayed to Jesus. I grew up with Indians and Dutch and American. It was pluralism at its best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I always, in the last few years as well, I've been, you know, connected to, you know, an advocate of speaking to Palestinians and bringing Palestinians and Israelis together. But I must admit that I'm in shock at the moment. I'm very confused within. I'm going through feelings within which I'm not even aware of. You know, I'm trying to digest them. I have, and like I said, I'm just an average person living in a great place just outside of Tel Aviv. But my son's girlfriend as well, who were actually in San Francisco at the time this happened. And they flew back now to Israel, but her family were from one of the kibbutzim. So, wow. You know, it's really, really difficult to digest because I'm sitting there with her family. There are four families from one family that come from the kibbutz Be'eri, which was hit hard.
Hard,
and,
yeah.
You know, I'm sitting with the family. So this family, the father and the son are dead. This family, they're being held hostage. This family, the brother was murdered. So I'm telling you, it's tough. And it also really touched, I think, not only Israelis, perhaps Jews abroad as well. It touched places really deep down because my whole family were from Poland. My whole family were wiped out. All my father's, his father and his, like, six out of seven of his brothers were killed. So my parents went through the Shoah, the Holocaust, and it touches really deep places. You know, having to sit in these safe rooms. The kids not allowed to talk. They need to pee in buckets. They, you know, no food for hours on end. And this is close. It's close to home. It's not like someone, it's everybody has someone. Like I say, my son's girlfriend. So I am feeling rage. And when the way they, and babies being held in cages and 40 somethings hostages, babies. One of the kids there isn't even 1 year old.
How utterly fucked up.
And I'm trying to find empathy. I'm trying to feel, you know, compassion for the good Palestinians, you know, on the other side. And there are good compassion, but I am feeling angry and I'm having a really hard time getting over it.
Well, for sure.
I feel like an idiot as well to some extent because I feel naive. I feel I was wrong. I feel maybe I didn't see the picture correctly because there was, you know, I was very, very left wing. I was very, you know, we need to get, you know, mustn't expand settlements. And I still think so. But I really felt, you know, we're the strong ones. We can, you know, direct things. I was wrong. And I know today I was wrong. Because we are dealing, I mean, I had no idea the width and the scope and the depth of the hatred and their brain. They're so brainwashed, the Hamas. I'm not talking about the Palestinians. I'm talking about the Hamas.
Sure.
But even today, when I hear that in the West Bank, they did a survey, how many of them would vote for Hamas today? Then 70% said they'd still vote for Hamas. So I always made excuses and I always said, oh, okay, if they say anything else, they'll be beheaded there. Okay.
Yeah.
So but no, at this point, like I say, I'm really confused because I'm saying, hang on, where are these voices?
Right.
The people on the kibbutz were all very peace-loving. You know, they were left-wing, peace-loving. They lived right across from the border, right, like really close to Gaza. And a lot of these people were people that were going over. I have a lot of friends, personal friends. They went over, brought them over to Israel to get good medical care, drove them back, brought over little kids with cancer to come and get medical care in our hospitals. And the same people were murdered. So I asked myself, where are these people that they help? Where are their voices?
Right.
Again, I'm saying, okay, their voices cannot be heard because they're living within, you know, these Hamas are monsters. Hezbollah are monsters. They're terrorist, radical, theocratic, crazy people that feel that, that, you know, it's nothing to do with being on earth. They're looking forward to going up to heaven. But I'm saying, hang on. I understood this all these years that they can't speak. And I asked some of my Palestinian friends, I said, why aren't you speaking up? They said, we're too scared to speak up. But on the other hand, look what's happening here. Gaza is being flattened. You don't, you won't have houses. You need to move. You're going to be refugees. You're going, you're suffering so much. So where are the voices? And if it's not their voices, then where are the Palestinian voices around the world? The academics.
Right.
And the voices we're hearing are also really, you know, confusing for me. You know, the anti-Semitism, which I, you know, people said to me a while back, you know, I remember the Syrian refugees. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When they came into Europe, and a lot of Israelis said, oh, you know, what's happening in Europe is that it's going to become, you know, Islam, radical Islam, and they're going to pay a price for it. And I said, what are you talking about? Germany, everyone, they were fantastic that they're opening up their doors to these refugees, poor people, what they've been through. On the other hand, today, I say, what a mistake. And so it's like, it's confusion. It's really confusing. Today, it's either them or us. 100%. I do not want Hamas on my border. I do not want Hezbollah on my border. I don't care at this point. I don't care what it takes. It's either them or me. For the Palestinian people, I do have hope that we'll be able to live, you know, two-state solution, have a home.
Sure.
It could be Paris for them. I want that, you know, everybody deserves to live a good life, but so do we. And that's another thing. We keep talking about the tens of thousands. Should I stop for a second? You want to ask me something? Should I let you ask me a question?
No, it's all good. Sheila, it's all good. Okay. You just keep going.
So, for example, you know, they keep talking about the numbers, right? The numbers in Gaza. I want to pose a question. I was there as well. Like I say, prior to post to October 7th, I spoke differently. Today I speak differently because I feel like I say, I feel like a bit of a moron. You know, we had rockets and missiles coming over us for the last 15 years. Not me here in Hodeshuan, although they have reached Hodeshuan where I live, but in the south for the most part, we're in the north, but mainly in the south. What these kids have lived for the last 15 years. They keep talking about the Palestinians being, you know, their miserable lives, but if we had not come up with the Iron Dome, you know,
missile protecting shield thing. Yeah.
Stop for a moment and let me ask everyone, what would we look like? We'd be smashed. Tens of thousands of people would have been killed. Because they landed in our, they were aimed at our cities.
Yep.
And why do our kids have to live in shelters all the time? And why do I need to apologize for coming up with the Iron Dome?
Mm-hmm.
Again, my heart weeps for the Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of the Israeli people are there. We do want to live in peace.
Sure.
We don't want this shit in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy for me to send my child now who's sitting in the army. He was in the middle of his life, finished his army, finished with the 3 years of having to not sleep at night. He went away. He came back to Israel because he wanted to, you know, come and serve. And I'm confused because I want to feel compassion. I want to feel empathy and I do not want to lose the humanity in me. Okay. That's what they're doing. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make us. And what do you do when you're dealing with inhumane people? They are not. I mean, if I start telling you stories about what they did, cutting off children's fingers.
You're going to see that this hour goes by super, super fast. And Sheila, the task of what I'm trying to do in my own silly little way is to open the door a little bit into your experience so that somebody who's listening can connect with that and care, right? And ultimately come to caring about what it is that is your human experience. And I know that by seeking to talk to people like you in Israel and who are going through this trauma and who are going through this, like, just like, how does your brain deal with this? I mean, I understand that it's actually opening a crack to the little Pandora's box, and I don't want to open it too much because I know there's going to be a lot in there. So luckily, or whatever, I've got this format which says we can spend about 15-20 minutes on a photo, and then we kind of should move it along.
Okay.
So just to end, just for a second, so the image is, just to bring it back to this image, it's just fucking brutal. It's just maybe 100 cars that are just burned completely through. And I can't imagine, or I don't want to imagine that there were people in these cars when they burned, but maybe there were.
Absolutely.
And it's fucking crazy.
What happened there was that the sirens went off.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, no big deal, sirens. But then they realized that the rockets didn't stop coming in. And then, by the way, the Hamas didn't even know about this party. They just came and shot at everything that moved and ran. And they took hostages. And they, you know, they did brutal things there as well. Rape the women. I mean, I don't want to go into stories here. But, and the cars were people trying to, you know, get away. And they were just there on the road, just shooting at all the cars. That's what it was all about. But on the other hand, there were amazing, brave stories. Amazing, mm-hmm. amazing stories of amazing Israeli brave mothers and fathers. And, you know, we're all soldiers in this country because we all do reserves. That's another sure. thing. Okay. Everybody in the army now. I mean, these are doctors and nurses and kindergarten teachers and teachers at high school and
people.
And
yeah.
The people. Yeah. We've all been taken out of our lives now. You know, we've all had to stop our lives. Okay, I'll go back to the party, sorry. But fathers and mothers getting into cars, driving, you know, the children SMSing, mom, dad, they're all shooting at us. We, you know, come and help, mm-hmm. get us, save us. Stories of young girls being, they had these, what they call migonit. It's like shelters, you know. So they ran to the shelters. What they did was throw grenades in them. So you had like, you know, young 22-year-old with 30 kids packed up on them. Other kids running, you know, trying to escape with the cars. It was just one big horror show. I don't think somebody in Hollywood, we showed the film, there was a 45-minute film that was shown to people in Hollywood and also to journalists. They say they couldn't come up with such a nightmarish type of a, nobody could, it's barbaric. It's even, you know, Hamas is worse than ISIS. People say Hamas is ISIS. Mm. In my opinion, they're worse than ISIS, what they did. They put a kid, okay, I'm not, again, we'll go back to that
after. How's this? I'm afraid to look at the next image, but I think we have to go on to the next image, if it's okay with you.
Go for it.
It's a diptych. And on the left, it says Israeli combat vest. And it's like a model, I guess, wearing what looks like a combat vest. So it's like the person's wearing a black t-shirt and around it is like the fatigue camo, whatever. It's got some plates, like protective plates. It's got a belt with protective belts, wearing pants with like camouflage pants. And on the right, there's a image that says Hamas combat vest. And it's a person wearing one of those, it looks like a baby Bjorn, I guess, but it's a baby wearing Hamas, sort of the green and white headdress. And it's a baby, just sort of strapped to the front of this, in camo, you know, it's a camouflage sort of baby. Okay, Sheila, where are you taking me with this image?
Okay, this photo is basically, I'll try and end on an optimistic vote, you know, like you said, we want to be optimistic. It's difficult to be optimistic though at this moment.
For sure.
I'm trying. But, for example, they use, again, everyone, a lot of the, especially in America, we've seen it in the academic circles, all these mm-hmm. ignorant people. They keep blaming us, but the blame is, you know, free Palestine from Hamas, not free Palestine from, what is it they say? They're using their people. They're using the people mm-hmm. we just went into now. Our soldiers just went into the hospitals. I'm in shock. Sorry. I'm in shock. They found, they took the hostages to the hospital. This is a hospital. The hospital, according to international law, we don't, for example, I can tell you, they say about Israel's being so, you know, they're bombarding and we don't drop bombs. Do you know how many pilots I know, personal friends of mine who are pilots, that they go in and they come back out and they don't drop nada. Nada, because mm-hmm. they don't want to endanger children. But what are the Hamas doing? Instead of taking care of their kids, they are endangering their lives by using their private houses to store weapons, to use their private houses to, you know, they use them as shields. That's what that, sure. that photo is all about. It's a kid being used as a shield. Not to mention that they've gotten billions of dollars, billions of dollars of Hamas. And this money, unfortunately and sadly, instead of going to build the city, they could have built a beautiful place there. You know, they got Gaza, the beach. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
They could have made Paris of the Middle East. We'd love to have good relations. But they used, instead of using the pipes for water, they use them for rockets. Instead of using the oil for the hospitals, they used it. So they are punishing their own. That's what people need to understand abroad. And again, yeah. I am really adamant about it now because I'm so convinced after October 7th. You know, I did look back. I questioned myself the whole time up until October the 7th. But today I understand I was wrong. I was really one of the first people to come and, you know, say no to Israel. And, you know, we need to do things otherwise. You know, we are stronger. We're the strong ones. We're the, you know, we should direct things differently. But it's not, that is not the case. And I understand it more than ever now. And so when I saw a kid, this poor innocent baby, Palestinian baby, it's not Israel's fault. We do everything in our power. I really think it's crazy to say a moral army because warfare is a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
But they are using babies as shields. They're using hospitals. Sure. So I want, you know, this is what I want people to understand.
Mm-hmm.
I really, today, Golda Meir, our prime minister, she said, if they put down their arms, there will be peace. If we put down our arms, there will be okay. And I never accepted that. I said, absolute crap.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I really feel that that is the truth. And again, it's not the average Palestinian. I'm sure there are a lot of great Palestinians. I know a lot, you know, I know some Palestinians. But again, I'm not hearing their voice. I'm not hearing their voice.
Well, that's one of the things that I find, and I understand that there is a culture of intimidation and fear. And okay, so you're from, okay, you grew up in Hong Kong, right?
Yes.
Now imagine for most Hong Kong, like I've lived in Hong Kong for 20 years, you know, nice to meet you, le ho, le ho.
Yeah.
And before that, I lived in Montreal, right?
Right.
Now Montreal happens to have, like when I was in university, and there were like sort of anti-Israel demonstrations or whatever, there was always this undertone of violence and intimidation. And it was really kind of like, it was like a really toxic gathering.
Ooh.
Like I once went to this protest, like an anti, like it was like funny, like this anti-fascist protest because of the, against the police or police brutality or something like that. And the anti-fascists were dressed like neo-Nazis. Which to me was just like, so you're shaving your head, you're wearing the red, the black combat boots, and you're like, you've got like this real fascist sort of energy. Right. And so that was my experience in Montreal. And then I see these demonstrations. They're not exactly, in terms of the energy, in terms of the vibe.
Are you talking about the demonstrations around the world?
That's the thing, is that it feels like the line between like demonstrations against Israeli brutality attracts, and those demonstrations really feel fascistic to me in a way that when you see like a pro-Israel demonstration, people are dancing and singing, and it's a very different energy.
Such a different energy.
That's also hard to reconcile.
It really is. Listen, I'll give you an example. Something I saw, which I found absolutely hysterical, where I saw is, so, you know, kids with these signs saying gays for Palestine. And underneath it, it said chickens for KFC. Okay, for confirmation.
Right.
Okay, same thing. It's absolute ignorance. Ignorance is the root of evil. And I always say, go get an education. And also, we need to face up to it that there is, you know, I think we've gone so, what I've realized today as well, all these progressive left-wing, you know, liberals, over-liberal. I mean, I'm a liberal. But listen, we need to look at things as they are. And we need to, and there are facts. And I think a lot of the problem is also the social media today, where it's just so much, you know, there's no way of knowing what the true facts are. I saw someone interviewing these kids that are demonstrating. And they said to him, okay, would you like to sign a petition for Hamas? Yeah, sure. Okay. So are you for raping women? I mean, or are you for beheading? Are you for whatever? Are you for? Yeah. Okay. So they didn't even, what is apartheid? Is there apartheid in Israel? They're saying apartheid is apartheid. What are you talking about, apartheid?
Sure.
One of our Supreme Court, you know, high judges is an Arab. We have, you know, they're in our hospitals, they're doctors, nurses. I mean, it might not be perfect, but it's definitely. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we've got this issue here where we're, you and I are having a conversation about, and the problem is that there's so many, I don't think it's a question of facts. I don't think there's a lack of information. I don't think that's the issue. So it's always like, well, what's going on underneath that? So what is it that's really going on underneath that? And that I think, I don't know. Can we answer it in this podcast? It's, you know, it's not, I don't think it's a lack of information. I think fundamentally it's just prejudice. And how do you kind of dismantle that prejudice?
I think it's prejudice and it's ignorance. I think is again, I think a lot of these kiddos, you know, there's mainly if they did take the statistics show that basically it's mainly the younger age, you know, 20, 30s, the older sure. generation, my age, like in 50s, 60s, that don't feel the same way. I think they're probably more well-read. That's what I always say to my students as well. I'm an English teacher. So I say, okay. They don't read books anymore. Mm. They get a lot of, and a lot of them, they're amazing. They really are amazing, smart kids. But they need to go into more depth. And yeah. again, and the feeling and what you're saying about this racism and prejudice, I don't know where that comes from. I was myself very naive. I didn't believe it existed until I saw what's going on now.
Right.
I've never had to face it. Everywhere I go, you throw me anywhere in the world, I never feel it. I never feel anything.
Yeah.
I've never, except for one time in Hong Kong when I was a kid. Mm. So someone told me how fabulous it was to shoot all the Jews in the back of the neck or something. But other than that, really, I've felt everywhere you throw me, I felt right at home. But it exists. I don't know why it exists.
Sure.
Different reasons, I think.
This is one of the tougher conversations because I'm trying to approach it through the lens of the podcast, which is like life is a gift, which is, you know, how do you make every second count, which is fundamentally to me an Israeli value, right? So here's the thing, like what is one of the biggest things about Israel when you go around there is a culture of life, right? Am Yisrael Chai. Like the land of Israel is to live, is alive, it's about life. And yeah. contrasted to that is a culture of death. I mean, basically jihadists, right? So it's not, yeah, sure, it's not all Muslims, but it is jihadists. And where are the Muslims to talk about how insane these jihadists are?
Right. Again, it begins and ends with education. I believe people are good at their base for the most part, but I think it starts and ends with education. And
sure.
it needs to be, I think the people around the world and the same people that are protesting now, they're going against, you know, the tide of optimism and the tide of love
right.
and life.
And pluralism and...
Pluralism. They're just doing harm instead of,
yeah.
You know, I think we need to project light onto those that have things in common, and those of us who want to live, and life is short, no matter if you're a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian. And I think that's where we need to put our focus, try and find more people like ourselves and spread that love. And
but it's yeah, but easy. Okay. Okay, so as you're saying this, I've got Israeli combat vest and Hamas combat vest looking at me, and I have to go on to the next photo.
Okay.
Sheila, this is, okay, listen, this is important. This is good. This is important.
Okay.
Children, hostages, and tunnels. So right. it's basically an hourglass. It's an illustration. It's not a photo. It's more like an AI produced sort of, graphic with, an hourglass, in the middle of the image. The light is coming from behind the hourglass, and there's like, let's say, 16 kids, boys and girls, roughly the age of 2 or 3, sitting in this like on dirt inside what is a kind of concrete. Well, I mean, it's an illustration, a concrete room, and each kid has an Israeli flag wrapped around their shoulders. Okay, so we,
No, I'm actually regretting it now, because I had a post, a little, I think I told you, I think I said this at the beginning of our talk. There was a little, there was a photo that I wanted to send to you of an Israeli child and an Arab child planting the seeds of love. But I will end with on an optimistic note, I
promise. Okay, but hold on. So I want to say that I'm a huge believer in, and I think I sort of suggested that in our messages, where I said, like, don't overthink it.
Right.
Go with your gut. Right. Go with your intuition. You know, go with your feeling. And this is a hard-hitting illustration of these children wrapped basically in a dirt. And so this is something that I think out of fear. Yeah, there's a fear of people to kind of open that awful Pandora's box or whatever it is, to uncork that little thing, to kind of connect with that idea of these intimidating men, because it's all men, showing up with guns, whatever, abducting children from the age of less than 1 to toddlers or whatever. And it's like, how the fuck do you put that? How do you, how do you wrap your head around that insanity?
Mm-hmm. I always say to my friends abroad, you know, close your eyes, pretend you're on a Christmas Eve, you're celebrating, or you just put the kids to bed, and then this huge commando comes in, dressed up with, you know, with his whatever.
Yeah.
Barges down your door. And pulls, you know, your kid out of bed. What would you do? Or takes your little child away. Can you imagine how these people felt after they sat for hours as well? And, and not only that, you know, why don't the hostages were taken from the kibbutzim. It all, you know, it all connects. When I think of these people coming in and going into their homes, your safe haven.
Yeah.
And putting your child out, or not to mention what they even did beforehand. I mean, I don't know if you want me to be gruesome and go into details of things that we know for sure happen, that we have seen, and we know a story after story after story. I ask myself, I don't know why I'm not hearing about it from a people abroad. Why aren't our hostages, these little babies being held under the age of 1? Where is the Red Cross? Okay, I understand they don't want to go in because they don't want to be shot. But where is the world? Where is the world? Yeah. Why are they screaming and saying 250-something hostages and women at 80-something, kids, children under the age of 1, and babies who are innocent? What do they ever do to deserve this? Doesn't matter if they're whatever nationality they are. What baby in this? And let me tell you, these babies, what they and there was a woman, a hostage, that gave birth.
She gave birth, yeah.
She gave birth in captivity.
How the
in these tunnels, which you can barely breathe. They're damp. They're disgusting. Mm-hmm. Some of these kids have had their arms blown off or fingers cut off.
Cut off.
And they're in there. And they haven't seen one international figure come and see if they're healthy, not healthy. So it's heartbreaking, not to mention what the parents going through. Just this morning, they said they've come to an agreement. We're going to release some of these kids. Mm-hmm. They are playing with us psychologically as well. They were meant to release them this morning at 5 a.m. Now they're not releasing them. It's just, imagine what the parents are going through. I don't think it could be a bigger punishment. And again, parts of families are there. Other parts are not there. The children are orphans there, that their parents have been murdered. Yeah. They're coming back to, after the bit, if they're going to come back. They're being raped. Okay.
Yeah.
They're being raped viciously, fiercely. Yeah. And I know a friend of mine who's a doctor. They saw what what happened, right. what they did to the insides of these young women's bodies. And where is the world? Where is the UN? Right. Where's the Me Too? Is that not good for Jews? Is that just, you know?
Sure.
So, again, I'm trying, so the hostages is, wow. You know, I have a picture from my son's girlfriend, her, my son and his girlfriend.
Sheila, try not to shake the mic too much.
Sorry. I'm passionate.
It's like you're quick. It's okay. Yeah. No, you are passionate. Listen, I'm with you 100%.
And I'm trying to be calm. I'm trying to be, calm. But
I know this is very, very difficult.
My son's girlfriend. Okay. My boys were abroad when this happened. They both flew back. That's another thing about the Israelis. They're amazing. It's amazing how these kids at 23 get on planes and come back, and all the Jewish whatever people were paying for their,
But I think it's this issue. It's like what's galvanizing is that it's an existential, it's like an existential threat. It's like, it's not like there's a choice,
I'm the first to say if it's a war of choice, I'm against it. I'm really against it. I always say my kids will not go. I will not send them to the army if it's not a matter of existence or not. But I was saying that my son's daughter, they were not in Israel at the time. They were abroad.
Your son's girlfriend.
My son's girlfriend and my son. And another son was in Portugal. He came back as well. But they were away. And when this happened on October the 7th, her family, like I said, is from Kibbutz Be'eri. It's one of the kibbutzim that was hit hardest. Her mother's brothers and sisters were there. These two kids, babies, they're 22, 23 years old. Okay, they sat there. I was actually going to send you one of these pictures as well. They sat there speaking to her cousin, because in the kibbutz they get, the families at the 18 years old, the 18-year-olds get a little unit to live on their own. So she was in her little unit on her own. My son and his girlfriend were talking, were WhatsApping her. They could hear everything. They could hear all the terrorists in her room. They sent her a location of her next door neighbor, who she sent a location where she was already in Gaza. She'd been taken hostage. Mm-hmm. Imagine what she went through, this 18-year-old in her room. They came in, they took her out. She sent a location to the next door neighbor, to my son's girlfriend's cousin, who she was online with for 10 hours trying to keep her calm. She came out of it alive. She's fine. It's just crazy.
Fine.
Crazy. Yeah, fine. Exactly. Not to mention the psychological, price we're going to pay. Even all of us. Every time I hear something like just a motorbike, I'm like, I jump.
Well, people talk about post-traumatic stress. And I mean, this was the goal that, these jihadists really wanted to inflict. It was just a trauma. And it's like, it's a cynical, ugly view. And actually, how does one reconcile the fact that we live our lives and somehow that there is this thing going on? And it's not fiction. It's not like the past. It is right now, actual real people like you, Sheila, are a person, and I'm talking to you, and you've got kids who are being trauma. Like, this is all a trauma that you're going through. Yeah. I'm not saying anything. This is how my interviews go, where I don't ask a question. I just talk and I say, you take it from there.
Yeah, we've all been traumatized. But there is another side to it, which is amazing, which really is amazing. And it's optimistic. And I think, hopefully, faith is contagious, and it will stick to other people beyond the border as well. This is the first time in Israel's history, I think, or in the world. I don't know if it's ever happened in the world where the country is actually ruling the country. The people are ruling the country, not the government.
Okay.
The government's a disaster. I'm very much against our government. And there's a lot of, that's an optimistic thing, how it's brought us together, what the people can do, the power of people.
Right.
I went down the other day to the Gaza border to help the farmers that have also been affected by this. They have a lot of Thai workers who are also kidnapped and abused and murdered. It doesn't matter what color you are. It wasn't against the Jews. They killed anything that moved. No. They killed Muslims.
Yep.
So, but the bright side of it, the nice, you know, like I say, the volunteering, what's going on in Israel is absolutely unbelievable. Even I'll use my son's girlfriend as an example. I mean, her family, the four families that come from the kibbutz, they moved to her mother's house in the center. They all lived at her mother's house in the center. And you should see, you know, what's going on, the volunteering, the bringing food, cooking. Everybody's cooking for everybody. Everybody's sewing. Everybody's doing whatever they can. It's unbelievable. I went to work in the farm, you know, picking on tomatoes. Beautiful side of the, you know, the human side. So with the Palestinians, like I say, I heard a nice, beautiful story, you know, about some, you know, doctors, you know, for borders for doctors, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
An American doctor described her experience in Gaza. So she mentioned, you know, I heard some amazing stories about Palestinian human beings who are not leaving there, and made sure that these doctors were fed because there was no food, and brought them water and whatever.
Yep.
We've got the good side of you. You know, that's what we need to breed. You know, hatred breeds hatred, love breeds love. It's tough. You've got to get rid of all these fanatic Islam. Mm-hmm. They're around the world. Look at all these terrorist bombings. It's everywhere. It's always the Muslims. And again, I'm not saying it's all Muslims. And it's spreading like crazy because the Western world are trying to be, you know, over-liberal, over-empathetic. That, you know, if someone comes to kill you, you defend yourself. It's written in the Bible.
You know, Sheila, I want to thank you. I want to thank you. I know this is a very hard conversation, but hopefully in between the lines, a listener is going to connect with it and hopefully get a slightly more enriched image of what's actually happening. So here's the photo. Sheila.
What photo is that? I don't remember now.
Okay, it's a cartoon. It's a graphic. It says England then and England now. So on the left is the Big Ben with, it's like one of the sort of the guards. I'm revealing my ignorance here.
Buckingham Palace, yeah.
Buckingham Palace guard. And on the right is, it's not Big Ben. It's turned into a mosque. And it's some fellow with a black beard. So it's an inversion of the black hat, which is now a beard, carrying a, I guess the point of this cartoon is that England is going to change back in the day of the British Empire to now a more jihadist reality. So was this meant to be the optimistic image?
No, the optimistic image was taken out, but I'll end on an optimistic note.
Okay.
You know, this was, again, it was just to get, I think it ties in with what I said about, you know, the academia and the over-liberal, progressive, you know.
I think the phrase that is this idea of the woke mind virus, right?
Right.
It's this idea of this really twisted, actually illiberal leftist, which is a really weird, like, flip. Okay, so maybe that's what you mean.
I think everything's been taken to the extreme. I mean, I can bring it to a personal basis when I even see my kids when I was working as in a high school. And, you know, the I, me, you, he, they, you know, I even walked into a classroom one day and I said, okay, guys, I want to divide you. These are, you know, 12th graders. You know, I want to divide you into boys and girls. They almost shot me. Mm-hmm. What do you mean, boys and girls? How dare you? You know, even.
But where was this?
Here in Israel.
Is it an English school? Because in Hebrew, it's hard to make that, isn't it? Is the debate as polarized in Hebrew as it is in English?
No, it doesn't come anywhere near. What, I was in America a lot in the summer, and I spoke to a lot of kids in the same age group, and it definitely doesn't come close. But they, you know, whatever, we seem to import everything that's not good from America as well. And you know, the kids are open to everything today. So we had really good talks about it. I'm really liberal. You know, whatever you are, you are. I think we're going overboard. I gave an example for, like, in Singapore, And in Thailand, I remember as a little girl, we used to go there. There was a boogie street, whatever. You know, there were transgenders left, right, and center. No big deal. No one made an issue out of it. And by making an issue out of all these things, by going over, then I think, you know, this is, it's all connected. The same thing with the Hamas and the, you know, the Me Too and everything. Everyone's taking things to an extreme today, I think. So we need to find that fine balance, I think. And the photo was again, was like, I was very naive. Like I said earlier on in our conversation, I think I mentioned, you know, like when there were half a million, Syrian refugees that left Syria and came into Europe, and, you know, everyone was, some people were against Germany opening their doors and they were very liberal about it. And I was all gung ho about it. That's how it should be. I think it's the right thing to do, but again, you need to ask questions. You need to scan things. You need to check things, because people, they're coming in and they don't want to, they're too scared to say, don't do this, don't live according to our rules. You're living in America. Let's take those, jump over to the other side of the Atlantic in America. All these people are like, you know, free Palestine. But listen, honey, free Palestine, go live in Iran, by the way, which we didn't even mention, which they're, major problem in the world. Go live in Iran. Come to Gaza and try being in your state of mind. That's the end of you.
Yeah.
Kaput, finito, beheaded. We even have it here in it. You know, we even have Arab Israelis that, you know, it's still some in the culture that you could just murder someone for really simple things that you and I would be outraged by. Yeah. You know, bringing home the wrong guy. Boom.
Yeah, like honor killings and all stuff.
Yeah, honor killing. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that picture was, hey, West, wake up, because it's at your doorstep. Mm-hmm. It's here now. I feel we're fighting a battle and trying to bring a message to the world. Let's find a fine balance. It's not being compassionate. It's not, let's live together in peace and love. But let's not be naive. Okay. Let's not leave, and let's look at things for what they are.
So here's what, if I may make the observation, right? Like, I am sure you grew up in Hong Kong, which I think is fascinating. Like, you grew up in Hong Kong, you made Aliyah to Israel.
And then I left. I went to the States for a few, I was in the States for a few years. I was a student in the States.
Okay. But so we are the product of our experience, right? And so here you are, you're living in Hong Kong, in Hong Kong, and then you live in the US and you live in Israel, and you have this kind of, and this experience that puts you in the left, liberal, whatever. But then how do we, you know, and we saw this after 9/11, right? Like, when something so violent and shocking happens, it really all of a sudden fractured people's understanding of, well, who am I and how do I make sense of the world and what are my values and, you know, the thing of pluralism and you know, diversity and acceptance. But then when something like this happens, it hardens you.
Oh, it's a hardening.
And right now, though, you're still in it. Like, it's not like life is back to normal. It's not like the economy is back to normal. It's not like anything's back to normal. Like, so it's still so fresh.
So many deaths, you know, the smell of death is still in us and around us. And every day kids are being killed. Every day kids are being killed, the young soldiers. Not to mention that all those that were, you know, the trauma that we're going through. I agree. You know, we need to, I don't, that's what I was saying to you at the beginning of the conversation, is that I'm in a conflict within myself.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, when I felt this rage, I remember I was in a spinning lesson. And in my spinning lesson, I had images in my mind, which were so gruesome that I wanted to do revenge.
So wait, I have to, you're in a spinning class, like an exercise class, like a bike, spinning class.
Yeah, I went to my spinning class.
The reason why I'm interrupting you, and I know listeners are just like, shut up, Ryan, stop interrupting. It's like, that's just it. We live in this world where you're in a spinning class, and when you're spinning, it's meditative, really. You're just going, and your brain is kind of following its tangents, and that's something that I'd like a listener to connect with. It's that you're going to do a spinning class which is about exercise and self-care. And it's this like nice hippy-dippy. And look, I do it too, so I can call it hippy-dippy. Practice that gets you meditative. Only the thoughts that creep into your head are of rape and beheadings and murder. And it's just,
It's I'm distancing myself from it, but it was right after, I remember it was quite close to the day this happened. And I remember when I was in spinning and I had this rage, I mean, the images I had in my mind, what I was doing, me, who's passive, you know, I thought I was, you know, a pacifist until, you know, I hate violence. War is bad. It's a lose-lose situation, but I had images of myself in rage. I mean, doing things that I would never imagine that I could do to these people. I was so angry and after that, I remember I had tears in my eyes because I was so, it scared the hell out of me that I could feel that and touch those emotions, which I don't want. I don't want, I'm a peace loving person. I want to live happy. Sure. You know, we live, you know, I really respect anybody regardless of colors, religion, you know, and I want to live with my neighbors in peace. So it was scary. So it's very, but again, I think, you know, the images, I don't know if you want to wrap this up or not yet, but the images, that I do have in my mind are still optimistic.
Right.
As hard as it is to be optimistic, I still, when I think, I still, you know, imagine this really tough region. You know, I will not give up on hope.
Sure.
As bad as it looks, you know, I still have a, you know, I'm praying that this, you know, in Yom Kippur, our Yom Kippur war, 4 years after we made peace with Egypt, and Egypt, they said, was our biggest enemy. Mm-hmm. And I'm praying to God, I don't know if this is going to happen, but it must happen because we cannot continue to live like this on the sword, not for them and not for us. Oh, my son just wrote to me that he's back on his way back. Yes, coming home. So I do, the image I have is like I'm praying to God that first of all, this government goes home because this government that we have at the moment, and I think they're also an obstacle to a lot of things, but hopefully, and I'm sure they'll fall, then we'll have another government, and I hope we can find the leaders in the world, everywhere in the world, but in our region as well, that will really put, again, they don't need to love us. I don't think the people in Saudi Arabia are going to love us, and I don't think Egyptians are going to love us. And it'll take years and years and years until we can actually love one another. But for the time being, to put the focus on finding a way to live and let this region blossom, including the Palestinians. And to put all our focus now, that's what I see. It's like the moderate Saudis, we made, you know, the Emirates, Egyptians, Jordanians, you know, it's not easy, but just to try and put all our focus there to find a way to live together in peace and let this area blossom. And put our money into education and put our money into travel and open, you know, but again, it's beyond me. It's a matter, I think it has a lot to do with the leaders that we choose as well.
Sure, sure.
And we don't have leaders today, unfortunately, because leaders don't go to politics.
Well, okay. So because these conversations go by quickly and, I do have to kind of lead this to a close. I'm going to ask somebody to imagine what it must be like to be in your shoes. And then I find it really annoying because somebody's going to be like, yeah, well, why don't you ask people to be in a Palestinian's shoes? It's like, okay, we'll get to that. But right now, to connect with your normal, like here, you're just a mom who just got a message from her son saying, I'm coming back home.
Right.
And so how do we make every second count?
Focus on the good. Focus on the good. On the value, you know, the family and friendships and nature. There's a lot of, even with everything that we're going through, children, be around little babies. And children, I teach young children as well. That's amazing. They're so real and pure and they haven't been, you know, brainwashed yet. And I think, you know, it's waves in life. And we're going through a bad wave now.
Sure as shit.
But it will, you know, after every, each darkest, you know, every dark hour, there is light. And I think there's no, you can't hope, there's no half hope. And hope is more powerful than fear. And I think it's our thoughts and our imagination. And that's another thing we didn't touch upon, but it's also to keep in our minds what we want life to be. And, and parallel to that, be realistic. And I go back and I say, you know, until this point, until October 7th, every time I saw a little Palestinian boy with a knife coming to, you know, stab one of us, all I wanted to do was hug him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, run up to him a little, I'm talking about young kids, you know, 10, 12, 13-year-olds that come, you know, to stab us. And they do. I mean, we have all the, you know, the kids. All I want to do is hug him. And I think that's what we need to, you know, again, this period has been a little harder for me to say, yes, I want to come and hug him. I probably want to give him a, you know, bloody kick up the ass. But, you know, but I want to come back to that point. I want to come back to that point, and I want to spread compassion and empathy. And we need to meet and bring us together. I see it in our country, what's happening here. It's amazing.
Okay, Sheila. Goisai, thank you so much for your time. And for sharing. And this was full on. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Shooting it raw?
Yes. Shooting it raw.